Chapter 58. It was daylight on the other side. We hovered above the stream and moved forward slowly. The comm log had shown us how to use the controllers while it ran all the rest of the ship's systems and kept us from making stupid mistakes. Aenea and I glanced at each other and inched the dropship over the treetops. Unless the Hell Woman could transit a Farcaster portal, we were safe. It felt strange making our last Farcaster shift without the raft, but the raft would not have worked here anyway. The River Tethys had become little more than a trickling stream between deep banks. The creek could not have been more than 8 or 10 centimeters deep and only 3 or 4 meters wide. It meandered through heavily wooded countryside. The trees were strange but familiar at the same time, mostly deciduous like champa or werewood, but broad-leafed and expansive like half-oak. The leaves were bright yellow and brilliant red, and carpets of them lined the banks of the stream bed. The sky was a pleasant blue, not as deep as Hyperion's, but deeper than most Earth-like worlds we had seen on this trip. The sun was large and bright, but not overpowering. Sunlight came through the windscreen and fell across our laps. "I wonder what it's like out there," I said. The comm log, ship, whatever it was now, must have thought I was talking to it. The central monitor pulsed and data began to flow down it. Atmosphere, 0.77N2. 0.2102, 0.009 AR, 0.0003 CO2, variable H2O, minus 0.01, surface pressure, 0.986 bar, magnetic field, 0.318 Gauss, mass, 5.976 × 10⁴ kilograms. Escape velocity, 11.2 km/s. Surface gravity, 980 km/s. Tilt angle of magnetic axis, 11.5 degrees. Dipole moment, 7.9 × 10⁵ Gauss over cm cubed. "That's strange," said the ship. "An improbable coincidence."
"What?"
I said, already knowing.
"These planetary data match almost perfectly with my database for old Earth," said the ship. "It is very unusual for any world to match so closely with—"
"Stop!" screamed Aenea, pointing out the windscreen. "Land, please, now!"
I would have smashed into trees on the way down, but the ship took over, found us a flat, rocky spot within 20 meters of the tree-lined stream bed, and set us down without a bump. Aenea was punching the airlock combination while I was still staring out the windscreen at the flat roof of the house beyond the trees. She was down the ladder before I could talk to her. I paused to check the autosurgeon, was pleased to see several of the lights switch to green, and said to the ship, "Watch over him. Keep everything ready for a quick getaway."
"I shall, Amendymion."
We came at the house from downstream and across the stream from it. The building is hard to describe, but I will try. The house itself was built over a modest waterfall that spilled only 3 or 4 meters to a small natural pool beneath. Yellow leaves floated in the pool before being whisked away downstream on the quickening current. The most noticeable features of the house were the thin roofs and rectangular terraces that seemed to hang out over the stream and waterfall as if defying gravity. The house appeared to be built of stone and glass, concrete and some steel. To the left of the slabs of terrace, a stone wall rose 3 floors, with a glass-cornered window rising in it almost the entire height. The metal framework around those windows was painted a gentle orange.
"Cantilevered," said Aenea.
"What?"
"That's what the architect calls those overhanging terraces," she said. "Cantilevered. They echo the limestone ledges that have been here for millions of years." I paused in our walk to look at her. The dropship was out of sight beyond the trees behind us.
"This is your house," I said, "the one you dreamed of before you were born."
"Yes." Her lips were trembling slightly. "I even know its name now, Rawl. Falling Water."
I nodded and sniffed the air. The scent was rich with decaying leaves, living plants, rich soil, water, and a certain tang to the air. It was very different from Hyperion's air, but it somehow smelled like home.
"Old Earth," I whispered.
"Can it be?"
"Just Earth," said Anea.
She touched my hand.
"Let's go in."
We crossed the stream on a small bridge upstream from the house, crunched our way up a gravel drive, and entered through a loggia and narrow entranceway. It was like coming into a comfortable cave. Pausing in the large living room, we called, but no one answered. Anea walked across the open space as if in a trance, running her fingers over wood and stone surfaces, exclaiming at small discoveries. The floor was carpeted in places, bare stone in others. Books filled low shelves in at least one alcove, but I did not take time to check the titles. Metal shelves ran under the low ceiling, but these were empty, perhaps just a design element. The far wall was taken up by a huge fireplace. The hearth was of rough stone, perhaps the top of the boulder upon which the house seemed to balance, and ran out 2 meters or so from the fireplace. A large fire was crackling in the fireplace, despite the warmth of the sunny autumn day. I called again, but the silence was heavy.
"They were expecting us," I said, making a weak joke. The only weapon I had now was the flashlight laser in my pocket.
"Yes, they were," said Anea. She went over to the left of the fireplace and placed her small hands on a metal sphere that was set into its own hemispherical niche in the stone wall. The sphere was a meter and a half or so in diameter and was painted a rich, rusty red.
"The architect meant this as a kettle to heat wine in," Anea said softly. "It was only used once, and the wine was heated in the kitchen and brought here. It's too big, and the paint is probably toxic."
"This is the architect you're looking for?" I said. "The one you plan to study with?"
"Yes."
"I thought he was a genius. Why would he make a wine kettle too big and too toxic to use?"
Anea turned and smiled. No, she grinned. "Geniuses screw up, Rawl. Look at our trip if you need proof. Come on, let's look around."
The terraces were lovely. The view from above the little waterfall pleasant. Inside, the ceilings and overhangs were low, but that just gave one more of a sense of peering out of a cave into the green world of the forest through all that glass. In the living room again, a glass and metal hatchway folded back to steps, supported by bars from the floor above, which led down only to a larger cement platform over a pool in the stream above the waterfall.
"The plunge," said Anea,
as if coming home to something very familiar.
"What's it for?" I said, peering around. "Nothing practical," said Anea. "But the architect considered it, and I quote, absolutely necessary from every standpoint."
I touched her shoulder. She turned and smiled at me, not mechanically or dreamily, but with an almost radiant vitality.
"Where are we, Anea?"
"Falling Water," she said. "Bear Run, in western Pennsylvania."
"Is that a nation?" I said.
"Province," said Anea. "State, I mean, in the former United States of America. North American continent, planet Earth."
"Earth," I repeated.
I looked around. Where is everybody? Where's your architect? The girl shook her head.
I don't know. We should know soon.
How long are we going to stay here, kiddo? I had thoughts of laying in food, weapons, and other equipment while A. Bedick recovered and before we headed off again.
A few years, said Ania. No more than 6 or 7, I think.
Years? I had stopped on the upper terrace, where we had stepped out at the head of the flight of stairs. Years?
I have to study under this man, Rawl. I have to learn something.
About architecture?
Yes, and about myself.
And what will I be doing while you're learning about yourself? Instead of making a joke, Ania nodded seriously.
I know. It doesn't seem fair. But there will be a few things for you to do while I'm growing up.
I waited.
The earth needs to be explored, she said. My mother and father visited here. It was mother's idea that the lions and tigers and bears, the forces that stole the earth away before the Technocore could destroy it. It was mother's idea that they were running experiments here.
Experiments? I said. What kind of experiments?
Experiments in genius, mostly, said Ania. Although perhaps experiments in humanity would be a better phrase.
Explain. Ania gestured toward the house around us.
This place was completed in 1937.
A.D.? I said.
Yes. I'm sure it was destroyed in the 21st century North American class riots, if not before. Whoever brought the earth here rebuilt it somehow, just as they rebuilt 19th century Rome for my father.
Rome? I felt that I was standing around with my thumb in my ear, repeating everything the child said. It was one of those days.
The Rome where John Keats spent his last days, said Ania. But that's another story.
Yeah, I said. I read it in your Uncle Martin's Cantos, and I didn't understand it then either. Ania made the gesture with her hands that I was growing used to.
I don't understand it, Rawl. But whoever brought the earth here brings back people as well as old cities and buildings. They create dynamics.
Through resurrection? My voice was doubtful.
No. More like, well, my father was a cybrid. His persona resided in an AI matrix. His body was human.
But you're not a cybrid. Ania shook her head.
You know I'm not.
She led me farther out on the terrace. Below us, the stream rushed over the little waterfall.
There will be other things for you to do while I'm in school.
Such as?
Besides exploring all of the earth and figuring out just what these entities are up to here, you'll need to leave before I do and go back to fetch our ship.
Our ship? I resolved to pull my metaphorical thumb out of my ear. You mean travel by Farcaster to get the consul's ship?
Yep.
And bring it here?
She shook her head. That would take a few centuries. We'll agree to meet somewhere in the former web.
I rubbed my cheek, feeling the whiskers scratch. Anything else? Any other little 10-year odysseys to keep me occupied?
Just the trip to the outback to see the ousters, she said. But I'll be going with you on that trip.
Good, I said. I hope that's all the adventures that we'll have waiting for us. I'm not as young as I used to be, you know. I was trying to be light about all this, but Ania's eyes were deep and serious. She put her fingers in my palm.
No, Rawl, she said. That's just the beginning.
The comm log beeped and tapped. What? I said with a spasm of concern about A. Bedick. I've just received coordinates on the common band.
came the comlog ship's voice. It sounded puzzled. "Any voice or visual transmissions?" I said.
"No, just travel coordinates and optimum cruise altitudes. It's a flight plan."
"To where?" I said.
"A point on this continent, some 3,000 kilometers to the southwest of our current position," said the ship.
I looked at Ania. She shook her head. "No idea?" I said.
"An idea," she said. "Not a certainty. Let's go be surprised."
Her small hand was still in mine. I did not release it as we walked back through the yellow leaves and morning sunlight to the waiting dropship.